What's up, everybody? It's been a while. I'm back with another EM Weekly. And this week, we are going to be talking all about the upcoming eclipse. Now, the eclipse is only, you know, affecting a swath of the country, very big swath of the country. But everything that we're going to talk about in this episode is also something you could use for just sort of general preparedness and readiness around large events. So, you know, almost every community has some sort of large event. And that's relative, right? Like if you're a community that only has, you know, a few thousand people that live in it and there's, you know, some big graduation ceremony for your local school, that could be a large event because it taxes your resources. It's something that's very much out of the ordinary, might impact your infrastructure, all that stuff. So we're going to be talking about it in kind of a generalized sense, but I'm also going to touch on a lot of stuff that is very specific to the eclipse and the impacts that this will have on a lot of communities, including the one that I live in, which is directly in the path of totality. So I'm super excited about this. So stay tuned. We're going to talk about some stuff we should be doing right now, some stuff you probably should have already done, but there's still time. We got a couple weeks and things to start to prepare for. But first, let's get through our ads and sponsors.
The L3Harris Extreme 400P radio solves problems and is specifically designed for emergency services. How do we know? We field tested it with medical, urban search and rescue, and collapse and confined structures. This radio is amazingly tough. Check out the L3Harris Extreme 400P radio at l3harris.com right now. How do you spell Doberman Emergency Management? EOP, OEP, HVA, HMP, Thyra, TTX, Drone, PDA. Whenever you need an expert, Doberman Emergency Management field experts are there for support. Contact an expert at DobermanEMG.com today.
Okay, we are back. So, the eclipse is, first, if you're not really sure if this is something you should be preparing for or thinking about it, if your community's in the path of totality, you 100% should, because you will be impacted no matter what, especially if you're a community that has like vacationers and stuff, tourists that come through. But it is a, you know, I mean, everyone that I watched a bunch of videos and the people who have seen it have said it, it's like truly a life-changing experience. So it's a big deal. And in addition to that, it is so extraordinarily weird to go through that even if you don't have the influx of visitors and all this other stuff, there's going to be impacts. People are going to like get distracted, crash their cars, you know, just all this kind of like weird stuff that happens with a, it's just all of a sudden the lights go out, right? I mean, it's just wild. So everyone should sort of be thinking about this, but if you're a community that has already started to talk about and anticipate a significant amount of visitors, you should be deep in the, you really should be at this point in the finalization of your planning process. So what are those concerns? So Vermont, our total population is, I think, somewhere between like 650, 700,000. So we're a small state. I mean, we're kind of a medium-sized city across the entire state as far as population goes. But we're expecting a increase in visitors of at least 100,000 plus. And I've read up to 250,000 additional visitors. So we are taking potentially, you know, we're increasing maybe a quarter of our population. I don't think that math is right. It's a third. Yeah, we could be increasing almost a third of our population. And the last time we had anything near this was our, there was a Phish concert, the jam band up in Highgate, which is actually near me. And it shut down roads. It overwhelmed all the local resources. It overwhelmed businesses, right? Like they're just trying to keep up with that level of population. But it was a big deal. And if you ask anyone who responded to that and, you know, was on scene sort of supporting that event, you know, it was a cluster. It was a lot. They still remember it. So we're talking potentially tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands more people than that event. Now, yes, distributed across a larger portion of the state, but the path to totality is supposed to like cut through sort of the northwest part of the state. So any community that is expecting that, the challenges are going to be the same. So first and foremost, like the one that I think most people are going to see is the increased traffic and just general visitors, right? So what does this cause downstream? You know, more traffic, more vehicles on the road, you know, for roads that maybe aren't designed for it. It's going to increase congestion, which is going to impact your ability to respond to different parts of your community quickly enough. People who show up are going to be buying lots of stuff. So if all of a sudden your community's got extra, you know, tens of thousands of people, things that will be really important, such as food and water, you know, the logistics cycle of stores and stuff probably are not really changing, you know, specifically for this. You know, some stores might order extra things that they think visitors will want, but it's going to cause a lot of problems. And what else, you know, might happen is you're going to have cars, you know, if you don't have the parking for this, people just start putting their cars everywhere, right? So blocking fire hydrants, maybe blocking emergency exits. So for first responders and emergency managers, you should start to think about your traffic plan, working with, you know, the towing services if you need to clear people out, talking about, well, what happens if, you know, it totally devolves. When the interstate shut down for the Phish concert, you know, that wasn't because of like cars sort of stuck in traffic. It's because people literally just abandoned their cars on the highway and walked to the concert. And when that happens, there's nothing you're like, you can pull up behind the line of cars with your fire truck and run your siren all day. If there's no one in the cars, you're not moving. So how do you make sure that you keep those routes open? And what do you do if you can't, right? Like, what is the option? Are we just going to let buildings burn because we can't get there? Or are you going to start to think about like, well, what are the alternative ways that we can figure this out? Impacts on critical infrastructure also come to that, right? So I'm talking critical infrastructure such as healthcare, hospital systems, doctor's offices, walk-in clinics, all of that stuff. You know, all of a sudden you've got, you know, like I said, our biggest city in Vermont is about 45,000 people. That's Burlington. My little community is anticipating, you know, potentially a good chunk of that population for a community that is, you know, when we're on a busy day, it's usually like, I think around 15,000. So if all of a sudden we're increasing our population greater than the biggest city, but we don't have any of that infrastructure that Burlington does, and they're going to be overwhelmed because they're going to have a huge increase. All of a sudden, your ERs are going to be, you know, overwhelmed because all of those people that come in bring in all of the problems that they had when they're at home, right? You know, health concerns, injuries from recreational stuff. If it's nice out, a lot of people are going to be out on boats. They're going to be, you know, kayaking, swimming, you know, riding bikes around, all the fun stuff that, you know, Vermont has to offer for the outdoors, meaning that they're going to get injured and everything else. With the increase, you know, in call volume, you know, our ambulance services in this state, just like in most communities, are pretty limited, right? Like they're almost always sort of running at capacity. And a lot of our state relies on volunteers. So starting to think about like, okay, well, how do we, so do we maybe staff an extra ambulance, right? Staff an extra engine, you know, all the police, whether you're off that, you think you're going to be off that day or not, you know, we're recalling everyone to work just, you know, at least for the period when we're expecting the most excitement, which is kind of like noon to like maybe 6 o'clock, you know, to try to, account for people getting there, setting up, enjoying the show, and then trying to get out of there. You know, and of course at night it'll be busy, and then in the morning it'll be busy because people who, you know, are likely to get here, you know, probably a couple of days before hang out, and they're obviously likely gonna stay after the event to hang out as well. So figure that out, right? Like start to understand, like talk to your local hotels and see, like, hey, what is your you know, booking look like? Is everything filled? If every single hotel in your community is booked and you're like, okay, when was the last time we kind of had this situation? You know, what did that do to our community? Like, was the ambulance running a lot more? Were we running more police calls? You know, all this stuff. Fire alarms are likely more likely going off. You know, Airbnb and all those sort of short-term rentals, campsites, they're all going to be filled as well. So have we, you know, done a run through on the campsites, you know, recently? Like, again, everything is going to be at the highest volume possible. On top of that, you know, you're going to have communication issues. your cell networks could be overwhelmed, especially if something happens during the incident. So if you're not, you should probably sign up for FirstNet. FirstNet's awesome. Actual preempt. You got your own sort of lane for communications. I've been a FirstNet user for, I think like 4 years now. Yeah, 4 or 5 years. I was the first, we got our first agency in the state to convert to FirstNet was UVM Police when I worked there. So FirstNet, you know, if you don't have that, you can certainly try to use wireless priority service and, you know, GETS and WPS, which is a card. It's probably a little late to get that. But if you do have it, you know, it is an option. Personally, I have been in a lot of situations where the community, like, you know, cell towers should have been overwhelmed and I did not ever use WPS and GETS because it's kind of a pain. It's not very easy. And unless you're really important, you only kind of get bumped up like one more tier. So, but you just have to think about that. Okay. So if the cell networks are going to be overwhelmed, possibly, you know, go down, you know, are you talking to your local communication providers and figuring out, you know, are you, can you bring in additional resources? You know, do we set up FirstNet towers? We have, you know, portable systems like the Colts and the Cows. You know, would it be an appropriate situation to try to get those in place in case something happens? You know, and alternatives, right? Like your radio communication systems. Do you have enough radios if you bring in everyone, right? Like some departments only run enough to have radios on your like primary trucks or your, you know, the unit, the police officers that are on duty. You might not have spares if you're bringing this huge group of people in. You know, what, how does that work? You know, what kind of stuff can you do? And then how are you, do you have a communications plan so that if you start to have these issues, you know, your PACE plan, your primary, alternate, contingency, emergency, as things collapse and roll over, do you have that next plan? And what happens if it all goes down, right? And especially when you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are, may not be familiar with your area, may not be familiar where like fire departments and police departments and hospitals and all that stuff is. So if they have an emergency, they may not even know where to go. And what happens if they can't get there? So, you know, if you have a huge, huge crowd of people and everyone starts dropping because it's also hot out, probably not going to happen in my area, but April can get up there. We've had Aprils where we've had 70 degree plus days, which doesn't sound very hot, but when it's cold for the last 6 months, that's 70 degrees, or if your body's not acclimated to it, can be pretty miserable. So just thinking about that. Okay, cool. We have to make sure that we have some sort of plan for getting, so maybe putting up some signage, right? Like what should you do if your cell phone isn't working? Because there's going to be, especially like people who are filming and maybe streaming it, you know, FaceTiming with their, the system's going to probably get overwhelmed no matter what. So maybe just putting signs around your gathering places, right? The parks, the events, and just saying like, hey, in an event of emergency, if your cell phone doesn't work, here's what you should do, right? Go to a landline. You know, there'll be maybe some rallying points where, you know, you'll have public safety people sort of spread throughout your community so that someone could walk up and talk to them. Come up with something. Again, we're kind of on the tail end of the planning process for this, but it's definitely worth taking the effort to do that. And then public safety, think about your folks as well. Anything that you send out could get stuck there, right? Like if you're sending police officers and maybe staging fire and EMS at your gathering sites, the big events, they may not actually be able to transport out of there if there's something that goes down, and you may not be able to get them help if they're calling for it. So making sure you communicate like, okay, what do we have enough stuff there? The worst case scenario planning, right? So like if you're expecting a gathering of thousands of people, you know, what is the thing that scares you the most? You know, like a mass casualty event, a car plowing through, you know, the fence, some sort of, you know, intentional act, all these things where you need a lot of stuff really, really quickly. So thinking about that and then thinking about, okay, well, how do we sustain this potentially for a long time if there's no help? And then what do we do when we need to get that help? Think about it in kind of the same way the military thinks about it, right? If you're on a forward operating base, you know, what they plan for is sort of the daily injuries that they need. And then the mass CAS, you know, type of event where all of a sudden you're overloaded and now you need to deal with a ton of trauma and sustain that treatment for at least, you know, a period of time until you can get transported. I mean, it's the exact same thing. So make sure that your folks have the ability to communicate, that they have what they need for sort of their daily stuff, that they have what they need for a surge of some kind if something were to happen, and then sustainment for at least a period of time. You know, all the meds and fluids and bandages and tourniquets, all that stuff, you know, just try to be ready because we're not sure how long it could take to get help there. Even like things that we're not thinking about, right? Like do all of your responders have the eclipse glasses, the ones that are actually certified and will protect their eyes as the eclipse is happening? Because again, they're human. They're going to want to watch this. Yes, of course, the police are going to be trying to keep an eye on what's going on. But like, you're at a once in a lifetime event. You're going to want to look and you want to make sure that your folks are going to be safe, because if they injure their eyes in the middle of this and then something happens, now you've got all of the headaches of a, you know, workplace injury on top of like you just lost one of your responders because now they can't see, you know, and then the long term impacts of that as well. Heat-related illness and hydration and general first aid, right? Like anytime you have a big, large event, depending on the temperature, you know, if you have a high temp, high humidity day and you don't have enough water, you don't have enough cooling areas, you just have to anticipate that there's going to be a lot of heat injuries. And those can quickly overwhelm resources because everyone experiences the heat and humidity. We all sort of like deal with it differently. I remember working the Vermont City Marathon. You know, it's tens of thousands of people come in for this marathon. And it was hot when we started. You know, it's May. Again, we're coming out of our colder months. So not all of us are acclimated, but even by like just normal standards, it was hot and humid. And by mid-morning, we were like, this is going to be bad. And sure enough, they ended up having to stop the event because it was just like this constant radio call of like, runner down. You know, I mean, they're just transporting people all over the place. And that's on top of just the other medical issues that happened during a large event and exacerbated by all of the health. So if you've got prior health issues and stuff, the heat and humidity are not going to help you feel better, right? You got a heart condition. Diabetes, any of these things where like sudden changes in your body's chemistry, temperature, all of this can, overwhelm your own system. And then a problem that, you know, maybe was manageable under the best of circumstances now becomes much more unmanageable and you're going to need some help. So again, just thinking about all that stuff, like how do we deal with this? How do we prepare for this? And what things can we do ahead of time? Like putting out, you know, if the temperature looks like it's going to be hot, try to set up cooling stations. Make sure maybe you're ordering extra hydration, requesting, you know, some water resources from the National Guard or whatever else. And in some cases, this means, you know, you might want to think about how are we sort of posturing ourselves for this event? I posted something on LinkedIn last week that I think, you know, you may have seen, and I think it's worth considering. And that is, I guess it was a couple weeks ago, declaring a state of emergency, right? Like there is in many states, you have the ability to declare a state of emergency ahead of time so that you open up certain resources, requests, funding. It might change how the laws work so that you have a little bit more leeway to get what you need. And doing this preemptively so that you don't have to deal with it the day of when everything is hitting the fan and now you're like, oh my gosh, I really wish I had better prepared for this. On top of, you know, the preparedness and readiness aspect, like if you haven't started planning for this, it's not too late, but you got a lot of catch up to do. Every community that is going to be within the path of totality will have some sort of impact. And if you haven't heard from your state or your county or even your local resources thinking about this, you need to get that conversation going right now. And there are a lot of resources out there, but you should plan in the same way that you plan for any special event, bringing in large populations. And if you're sort of like, oh my God, is it too late? It's not. In fact, there are so many resources. So the last time this occurred, states put together the planning materials and stuff. A lot of lessons learned came out of that that have been implemented in this most, you know, the most recent one. So there are tons of after action reports that you can go through that talk about, you know, where did they miss, right? And then what worked really, really well that we would do next time. There's a ton of planning guides out currently. Every, you know, kind of federal agency that has any connection to, you know, emergency management or first responders has produced documents. So CISA has a document. FEMA has been kind of sprinkling out, you know, various documents, you know, specific to the eclipse. But either way, the goal is to, you know, just go through the motions of a normal planning process. So, you know, first get your stakeholders together, right? And that means get the wide breadth of stakeholders in your community, including your recreation department, your planning, all the folks that are sort of involved in the event planning process that maybe you're not always involved in, your first responders, your local businesses, because again, everyone's going to be overwhelmed. They're going to be a resource in this. That public-private partnership is really important. Hospitals, health departments, just tap into everyone you can, all your populations that might need help due to health, mobility or other concerns, you know, get those folks involved, and start that planning process. Do your assessment, you know, what are the things that we're most concerned about, you know, for our community related to this event, you know, mass casualty, traffic concerns, security, you know, critical infrastructure. Start to document those, you know, do your probability and then the consequence, you know, what happens if this happens, figure out like, what are the ones that we have to plan for, the top, you know, three, top five, top 10, whatever your, you know, you sort of use as your baseline. And then write out some plans, right? Like start to just get some rough stuff in and, you know, at least like, okay, here's how we think it'll go. And with 2 weeks, you could still run a couple tabletops, get people together, you know, half hour to an hour. I just saw Indiana has a really cool tabletop in a box for the eclipse. And you can change that to, you know, any state, county, you know, local that you want. And they've got it built in, which is really handy. So, you know, definitely try to take advantage of the resources that are already there. You don't have to come up with this stuff on your own. But you do need to start, you know, running through some exercises so that you can sort of test your plan. So if you already had a plan, and if not, see if your new plans are going to hold water and actually be effective. Start to communicate with all of those folks, right? Like, what are the concerns that you have? Start to share that with your community. Get your PIOs involved. If you don't have a PIO, that means you're the PIO. So start to send out messaging and, you know, talking about like what to do if the cell networks go down. What do you expect people to do if roads are blocked? What should they do ahead of time? You know, should they go out and travel? Should the locals maybe hide out? You know, all these things that you want them to do ahead of time, like stockpiling equipment, you know, discussing what to do if there's a medical emergency and help isn't arriving, right? So all these things that we can be doing ahead of time to make our life easier when it happens. And then making sure, you know, are people signed up for your mass notification system? Your alert and warning program should be on top of that. And if they aren't, you know, start to open that up and figure out, can we bring in new people into our mass notification system, right? So depending on your system, you know, there's usually some way you can text a number or use a hashtag, some sort of way that you can sign up just in time for that system so that you can start to capture visitors who you otherwise may not get the messaging, right? You always have WIA, you know, in the IPAWS network. But if you are trying to share information that's not an emergency yet, but if it doesn't get out there, it could eventually become an emergency, you know, routine things like road closures, you know, maybe issues related to, hey, that hospital's at capacity. So if you need, you know, only go there if you have a true medical emergency. If you're having routine issues, call a doctor, go through the clinic, all that type of stuff. You know, use that system for that. So it's also a good time because it's captured everyone's attention and interest to, you know, get people signed up on your systems and sort of involved in emergency planning and preparedness and readiness. You know, maybe figure out other volunteer opportunities for people to help out with this event. Then you can use those folks for other future stuff. So Get the community involved. Get your messaging out right now. All right. So I came up with a bunch of questions just to sort of go over stuff that, you know, I wanted to think about, like, you know, what would you all be thinking about? So what can emergency managers do to prepare their communities for increased traffic and influx of visitors? So we talked about that a little bit, but first and foremost, identify your choke points. What are the biggest concerns? What are roads that absolutely cannot be blocked? And how are you going to keep those open? You know, have you communicated to hotels, campgrounds, all your Airbnbs and stuff to say like, hey, this is great. We're going to do a lot of business for this event. But we also need to make sure that, you know, we're all partners in this. You know, can you tell your guests to park in the appropriate areas? Figure out where is the overflow, because there's probably not going to be enough parking in the communities that are in the path of totality for the most part to be able to handle that influx. So do you have mass transit stuff? Can you park people sort of in areas that are outside of there that, you know, otherwise would not be getting used this day? You know, park and rides or giant, a lot of schools have shut down. So can you use school parking lots to help with that influx? And then busing people to and from events so that they're not all parked right there, right? Because that's going to be your main concern is not the, you know, outskirts of town where there's not really a whole lot going on. It's going to be usually in the heart of the community, in the parks and, you know, in the event areas. If you can get cars out of those and park everyone else sort of on the outside, that's going to make your life a lot easier when it comes to response. How can healthcare facilities and emergency services prepare for a surge in demand during the eclipse? A lot of that has to do with just asking for extra help ahead of time, right? Like get your folks in there. And it sucks because a lot of people are going to want to sit there and watch the eclipse. Come up with a plan for that, right? Like figure out a way to rotate people through so at least they can go outside, enjoy it. You know, it's a pretty short event. So it's not like we're talking about, you know, shutting everything down for hours. The actual like real event is only, I think it's like less than 10 minutes, right? So if they have the opportunity to get out and check it out, you know, figure out some alternative options for that. Just try to get people to enjoy it for sure. Because if you don't have a plan for that, people are going to be like, well, I'm taking my day off. You know, I had it scheduled a long time ago and too bad. Or you got to do the bad guy thing and basically say, yeah, we're canceling all leave for, you know, essential personnel. But there you go right there. Identify your essential personnel ahead of time. I know, especially for, you know, any agency that has, you know, unions, if you don't have a good plan for that, you're going to be dealing with grievances for the next 6 months. So, you know, make sure that you understand your agreements and that you can get the resources there effectively. And then think about how do we surge medical stuff, right? Like setting up first aid tents at the site. So maybe you can address all the minor stuff right there. Having a mass casualty, you know, plan, MCI type plan, in place with, you know, your routes and transport options already planned, your hospital surges over, you know, already planned. Our local community hospital, you know, can handle normal stuff, but any trauma, we're going to have to really fly them out. You know, the hospital will be overwhelmed very quickly with just a few traumas. So it's got to go to our level one, which is down in Burlington, or we start to fly out everywhere else. And we got to remember, like, it's for my region anyways, where most of our hospitals are in like Boston and stuff, like they're actually going to probably see a lot of people, you know, they're actually going to lighten the load a little bit because a lot of people are heading towards our state to try to take advantage of the path of totality and, you know, hanging out. And in fact, like this whole region is very rural with very limited hospital infrastructure. It's a lot of like community hospitals. So start to talk to your other hospital networks and your doctor's offices and stuff and see what are they doing. And you might also find that like some doctor's offices might close, right? Like, I mean, they want to be a part of this. And so, okay, those other things that we can use as a buffer during a, you know, medical surge, we might not have the access to, you know, if they're part of your plan, obviously, like trying to roll in random doctor's offices in the middle of a mass casualty is probably not a great idea. How can local authorities manage crowds and ensure public safety during the eclipse? You know, again, this is like one of those once in a lifetime events. So you trying to come in there and say, yeah, we're going to shut this down. It's probably not going to happen. Leadership and stuff, unless it's really, really significant, you're just going to have to figure it out and manage it and try to plan as, you know, just think of those worst case scenarios, be creative, right? Anytime I get a group of people and we're doing sort of a planning session, we're talking about what could happen. Allow people to think off the wall, like truly judgment-free, free flow, you know, creativity. Come up with like the weirdest scenario, right? Like, what are we going to do if, you know, all of a sudden a weird, you know, doomsday cult that's been waiting, you know, 100 years for this event shows up? You know, what are we going to do with, you know, no one shows up and we have all these resources, you know, how do we move this stuff? Like maybe we thought we were more popular than we are. Right. So just go through all the different scenarios and try to just game out, you know, what could and what may not happen. What do you have in-house? Like, where can you get that stuff? You know, again, think of like sort of the unfolding of this, event, right? Your local resources are overwhelmed, but that path of totality is pretty narrow. And yes, of course, you'll have like people staying in locally, you know, regional areas, but how far out do we have to go to start to get that help? You know, what lessons can be learned from previous Eclipse events? Go through those after action reports. There's so many. I read a ton of them. And a lot of them are really, really good. And, you know, like Tennessee had a really good one that had tons and tons of information about, you know, what they saw, you know, what they learned, why things worked, why they didn't. You don't have to be the first person to come up with this, right? Like there's tons of communities that were, you know, involved in the last major eclipse and they've already done it. And then contact your other locals, right? Your county, your state, everyone is probably thinking about this. So just, you know, collaborate and say, hey, we have all this other stuff. Do you think maybe you could share some of your resources? And I'm sure that they're going to. All right, we're 2 weeks out. What do we need to do? Review and finalize emergency plans if you haven't. Make sure everyone's got the right copy, the most up-to-date one. Any changes you're communicating, so making sure that you're actually marking your documents with the dates or the versions, however you do that locally, and that you are confirming that everyone has received them. Coordinate with your partner agencies. At this point, hopefully you have those relationships. If not, just start reaching out and saying like, what are you doing and how can we collaborate? You know, what are you going to, and the other main thing is like, what do you anticipate having available for this event? Are you opening your EOCs? Are you opening your department operations centers? Are dispatcher, dispatch centers, you know, planning for surge? Are police departments, you know, planning for this? So like, just think of like all the people that might need to be involved. Like I said, even the ones that you may not normally work with, your rec departments, your local business associations, all of those folks, just kind of reach out and get a final touch point for the event. Make sure that everyone's on board. Keep communicating with the public. Tell them everything you know, everything they need to know. No one should have, you know, get to the point of the event and then go, well, no one told me, right? And that means trying to utilize all of the resources. Not everyone's online. You know, not everyone's going to be signed up for your mass notification system. Do you have cork boards in front of your local, you know, gas stations that you can put stuff up on, you know, at the all your local stores? A lot of places are kind of like, especially businesses and stuff, are already coordinating, you know, the event for promotions and other stuff. You know, you could probably just send them a document and they'll just include it with that so that they can print it out and put it in their stores and stuff. So, you know, just try to get that stuff out there ahead of time and then communicating like the most important stuff, the have a plan, wear your glasses, keep hydrated, all that stuff. You got 2 weeks to test all your, you know, kind of give a stress test on all of your equipment. And so if you're going to be using your radio system, you know, using new channels, are you going to use repeater system? Are you going to have some tactical channels? You know, what are the sort of ranges of those and, you know, how reliable are they? Do you have the backups? Do you have your pace plan? Do you need signboards? Are they secure with the information? So, you know, people putting bad messaging up, all of that stuff. Do you need water? You know, medical equipment, additional traffic safety stuff, you know, whatever, extra, you know, vehicles. Do you need to make some mutual aid requests? Whatever. Test that stuff now ahead of time. Get some final training and briefings, right? Like get everyone, if there's stuff that they're going to be doing that they're not used to, get trained on it, right? Set up a opportunity to do, you know, a traffic incident management system plan. If you haven't done TIMS, you can go online now. I think it's respondersafety.org. All the traffic incident management stuff you could possibly ever want to need is on there. That's going to be desperately needed for this. Conduct final trainings and briefings. Again, do it now, get it early. the briefings and stuff. Make sure everyone's got the right information, the most up-to-date information, okay? Keep an eye on what's happening. Monitor the situation. Watch those weather reports. We're too far out now for any, obviously, reliable weather condition, but continue to monitor that. And as it gets closer, monitor and update and adjust your plans as necessary, right? Like, the weather is absolutely going to be nightmarish. You'll get the hardcore people for sure. But a lot of people will probably alter their plans if, you know, there's no chance of actually seeing the event. Even without, you know, the clear skies, people, it's still going to be an experience. Like, all of a sudden, all the lights going out in the middle of the day, is pretty serious. So, just keep an eye on that, you know, monitor traffic stuff. Try to check in with your hotels and your businesses to see what they're hearing and what they're expecting. And then finally, set up your EOC plan. Like, you're probably going to have to open an emergency operations center, just because with everything being sort of taxed, as much and as fun as it is to do everything remotely, it's nice. Having everyone in the same room during a event like this is probably the right idea. And if not, at least get it to warm status so that if you need to pull the trigger and open it up, you can. So, you know, have all that stuff ready just in case. And if you can, open it up or come up with an alternative, right? You want to get people close to the situation. Maybe you have your mobile command post or a mobile EOC that you set up so that you're a little bit, you know, more involved. Whatever the plan is, test it out. Make sure the generators work. Make sure the batteries are good. You know, it's, if you haven't used it in a while, you know, do all the lights work? Do you have internet? Are the computers updated? All this stuff that you don't want to have to discover the day of. And make sure you have paper backups, you know, just in case everything else fails. But yeah, we're in the final throes of this. I'm excited. You should be excited. If you have stuff that, you know, you thought of that I didn't mention, post it in the comments, you know, like, comment, share this. Everyone who's in the Path to Totality, we're in this together. So I'm really excited to see this. This is it's a once in a lifetime thing. Don't treat this like it's, you know, like, this is a big deal. It's going to be awesome. People are excited for it. So let's get out there. Enjoy the eclipse. Like, comment, share. Tell me what you thought. Again, any ideas that you have that I didn't mention would be great. And we are getting close, so sooner the better. And we'll talk soon.